Today's reading is Hebrews chapter 12 from verse 14, and it's in the Pew Bible, page 1211. Make every effort to live in peace with all men and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one misses the grace of God, and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. See that no one is sexually immoral or is godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. Afterward, as you know, when he wanted to inherit this blessing, he was rejected. He could bring about no change of mind, though he sought the blessing with tears. You have not come to a mountain that can be touched and that is burning with fire, to darkness, gloom, and storm, to a trumpet blast, or to such a voice speaking words that those who heard it begged that no further word be spoken to them, because they could not bear what was commanded. If even an animal touches the mountain, it must be stoned. The sight was so terrifying that Moses said, I am trembling with fear. But you have come to Mount Zion, to the heavenly Jerusalem, the city of the living God. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all men, to the spirits of righteous men made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. See to it that you do not refuse him who speaks. If they did not escape when they refused him who warned them on earth, how much less will we if we turn away from him who warns us from heaven? At that time his voice shook the earth, but now he has promised, once more I will shake not only the earth but also the heavens. The words once more indicate the removing of what can be shaken, that is, created things, so that what cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. Amen.
So we've been working our way through the book of Hebrews, and today is the last day in the book of Hebrews. I know. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Hopefully you've learned something from it. Hopefully you've been blessed by it. But the word, of course, that I want you to remember, or maybe three words that I want you to remember. What was the key word from Hebrews? Can you remember? The most prominent word? What was it? Better. Yeah. Jesus is better. 13 times in 13 chapters, the writer is saying how Jesus is better than everything. Doesn't matter what life throws at us, Jesus is better, Jesus is bigger, Jesus is more promising, Jesus is stronger, Jesus is whatever. These are people, of course, who are looking or are being tempted to go back to the old ways. These are Jews who have become Christians. But the temptation, the lure, the pull, the oppression, the persecution is pushing them to return to the old way. And the writer is saying, why would you do that? Because Jesus is better than the old way. Many years ago, whenever I was at Bible college, went on an overseas field trip, and I worked in a boys' home in Jamaica, which was a great experience. Dawn and I went, and we traveled there, and the first day we arrived, I was completely shattered, worn out, so I lay down in bed to go to sleep, and I was sleeping. When suddenly I felt the ground begin to rumble and tremble, and the bed moved across the floor. So there was an earth tremor, and it was kind of spooky, you know, because I was in a deep sleep, and suddenly your bed begins to move across the floor and say, what is happening here? This chapter is about things shaking and something that does not shake. That's what this chapter is about. That's what I want to kind of leave us with today, about a kingdom that does not shake. But these people, these Hebrews who have become Christians, are being shaken. And the temptation is to return, to go back. The things that they know, the ways that they know, where there's no shaking, there's a kind of stability and a comfort to it. But of course, the writer is saying, don't do that, because Jesus is better and his kingdom cannot be shaken. That's where we're going to get to in just a moment. But we live in a world that's easily shaken. It can be an earth tremor, an earthquake. People die. Our own lives can be shaken as we grow older, maybe, or as we get ill, or as we're disappointed, or as we get disillusioned. Life doesn't work out quite as it is. We're frail, we're feeble. It doesn't take much to shake us, to make us tremble. That's why earlier on he says, strengthen those feeble hands and your knees. Stand strong. But life can throw so much at us to shake us. And sometimes our lives can be a bit like a Christmas tree after Christmas. You give it a shake, and all the needles go, and it's gone. Life can be a bit like that. And so here the writer is writing to these people, saying to them, don't go back to the old ways. Stand strong. Be firm. There's so much in life, if we follow Jesus, that will say to us to go back. Not to take our faith too seriously. Don't let it go to your head. It's okay coming to church. It's a nice thing to do. But don't get carried away with it. That's kind of what the world might say, or people might say, or maybe we might say to ourselves. But actually, the writer is saying, stand firm, be bold, be radical. Don't treat it as a hobby. Be strong in this. And so he's writing to these people to encourage them to move forward. Don't give up what they have. And so he uses the story of Esau. You know Esau back in the Old Testament? Esau was the brother of Jacob. There was Abraham, Isaac. Isaac had two sons. The firstborn was Esau. The second one was Jacob. Esau was the eldest. By right, he had all the rights of the firstborn. Someday, he would have control of the family wealth, the family future, everything about this. But if you know the story, Esau sold his right to that birthright for a bowl of stew, for a mess of pottage. You think, how could that be? He gave up his entitlement as the firstborn for something to eat, for a moment's satisfaction. And when you stop to think of it like that, you think, that's completely dopey. It's like ready to be inherit a family business, which is a multi-million pound business, and you give up the right of that to inherit that for something silly, for food, for a momentary pleasure. And you think, that's not a good deal, is it? And yet that's what the writer is saying. He's saying to go back is like acting like Esau. And Esau was godless and immoral and all sorts of things that led him to that. But don't give up something valuable for a moment's gratification or for a period of time which is quiet. Don't go back. If you read any of Paul's letters, towards the end of the letters, he's always saying, say hi to so-and-so, or this person says hello to you. There's always a list of names. I think it's fascinating. It's like me writing a letter saying, you know, greetings from Greystones, and Mark sends his greetings, and Craig sends his greetings, and Brian says hello. And there's always these names, but there's this one named Demas. And he's frequently there. Demas sends his greetings. Demas sends his greetings. And then, in 2 Timothy, it says, Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me. Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me and has gone to Thessalonica. Demas, who was one of Paul's companions, he gave it all up for a moment's satisfaction or pleasure. He disappeared. He deserted. So many people do that. I can think of people that I know who have been strong in their faith and growing in their faith and just fell off a cliff, went from to nothing. Hero to zero. Can happen so easily if we don't stand firm. But then the writer goes on, which is the main bit I want to look at. This is it's the most remarkable passage in the whole of the book of Hebrews. And he's contrasting two mountains. Mount Sinai, Mount Zion. He's comparing and contrasting these. It's essentially comparing the old covenant, which is tied up with Sinai, which is where the law was given, and Mount Zion, the new covenant. Verse 18 takes us back to Sinai, and this goes back to Exodus 19. Do you remember how the people gathered at Mount Sinai? Moses went up the mountain to receive the Ten Commandments from God. Something amazing happened that day. There was a marriage take place between God and his people. But it wasn't a happy wedding day. It wasn't all light and airy and laughter. It was a terrifying thing. And he goes on to talk about that. He said it was dark, it was gloomy, there was lightning, there was storms, there was the voice of God, there was a trumpet blast. It was a terrifying sight. And the people weren't allowed to touch the mountain. Only Moses could go up it. Even if an animal were to touch that mountain, it had to be killed. Now, what is all that about? It was a terrifying sight. And that's what he's saying. The old days is associated with Mount Sinai. A terrifying sight. But why is it so horrific? Why is it so terrifying? One of the commentators puts it this way. It's all about the unapproachableness of God in the Old Testament. It's all about the unapproachableness of God. God, huge, judging. We are small, sinful. Yet he wants us to come close, but not too close, because that time has not arrived. God is unapproachable in his splendor, in his holiness. You don't mess with God. He loves you. He wants you eventually to come, but don't take him for granted. Things have to change. Lessons have to be learnt. A new way of life has to be worked out. God is unapproachable. That's what Mount Sinai is all about. It's a good place, but it's a place of fear. And then you look at verse 22 and following. The writer takes us to Mount Zion, a different mountain. This is not a place of fear. It is a place of grace and forgiveness. And as you read it, it's full of celebration. Verse 22, but you have come to Mount Zion, the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. Mount Zion was the holy mountain in Jerusalem where the temple was built, where people would flock to come to meet with God, because that's where he presents himself, on this mountain in Jerusalem. But the writer's not talking about this physical place in Jerusalem as they knew it, but he's likening it to a heavenly Jerusalem. It's a real place, but a place that they haven't seen yet. But it's a place that is there in the future for all who believe, all who follow Jesus. And that's what he's saying. We have come to this heavenly Jerusalem. And look at the things, the people and the things we have come to. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly. You have come to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks better, a better word than the blood of Abel. This is a place not scary and dark and terrifying. This is a place of celebration where people who follow Jesus have been perfected. Yes, the judge is there, but we don't need to be worried about the judge. Why? Because the mediator is there, Jesus, who has shed his blood for us. So we can approach God. Mount Sinai, the unapproachable God. Mount Zion, the God that we can come to and not be frightened of. So he compares these two mountains that people wouldn't have been very familiar with Sinai. So which would you choose? In essence, in going back, the people were choosing to go back to Mount Sinai, to the old ways, the old covenant, the unapproachable God. Which one would you choose to go to? It's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it? Who would not want to be in the place that is light and bright and welcoming and full of grace and forgiveness where God is and where we are and there is no fear? just celebration. But at this time, these people are being shaken. But they're being given the option. You can go back, or you can keep moving forward. They were being shaken. And the place would be shaken because very soon in AD 70, the Romans would come and completely destroy Jerusalem. They would demolish the temple. There would be no more sacrifice. More than 1 million Jews would die in just a few years after this letter is written. They would truly be shaken. But there is a shaking to come even greater than that. And that's what he talks about in Haggai chapter 2, verse 6, where he quotes this, "Once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens. I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens." This is referring not to AD 70. This is not referring to a shaking of us as our faith begins to shake. He's talking about when Jesus returns, which he will do. And he will come to shake us. Everything will be shaken. And what will be left standing? The old temple would have been gone from AD 70. But God is building a new temple. A temple not made with bricks and mortar, but a temple made of people like you and me. Living stones. That's what Paul calls us. That's where we have our living stones. God is building a temple of living stones, of people of all ages, people who put their trust in Jesus, people who have been washed in his blood, the blood of the new covenant that we remember every time we have communion. Remember what Jesus did on the cross. This is the new covenant. So he's going to come and shake everything. I met with the architect the other day. You know, we've been trying to get plans, and we really want to do something with the back of the church. We want to update it, renew it. And he was here the other day with his plans, and we talked about them again. But we're talking about this building being a listed building, and what you can do and what you can't do. And he was telling us about a house of a friend that he knows, an old house that is listed. So you can't actually make any changes. You can't do anything with it. And yet the owner has got no finances to keep it looking the part, or any inclination to want to keep it looking the part. And he says they've got window frames where they've got metal braces against it simply to hold it in place. Because there's that listing, there's that preservation to say you can't do anything with this building. You've got to keep it as it is. So they're trying to put supports in and to keep it all together, when really maybe it would be best to knock it down and start again. The Jews were hoping to hold on to the old structure. This is what they knew. And you can understand that this is what God had given them, this sacrificial system, this temple that was built to God's design, the ways to do that, the way to approach God and find forgiveness of sin. And they wanted to hold on to the old structure, the old building, the old ways, the old covenant. And yet Jesus came to make everything new. Wow. Isn't that amazing? So why would you hold on to the old? The old was good for its day, but it was meant to simply be a stepping point along the way. Jesus was coming. This is what they were anticipating. Jesus was the better temple. He was the better high priest. He was the better sacrifice. He was better in every way. So why would you try to prop up the old when the new had come? And that's what the writer is saying to these people whose world is shaking. But he's saying that God's kingdom cannot be shaken. And when you're a part of this kingdom, it doesn't matter what happens in the world around us or in the world, in my own world, my body might fall apart. I might be totally disillusioned. People might reject me. People might imprison me. Remember last week we were thinking about the persecuted church? People are imprisoned and tortured for their faith. People who can't get a job because they're a Christian. People who are killed. Houses, churches, that are burnt. But they're part of a kingdom that cannot be shaken. This is the kingdom of Jesus. So as we look at our own world, and many things might shake us, are we a part of that kingdom that is unshakable? On Jesus, the rock that will not move. Isn't it great to have a rock that won't move? The world's a really confusing place. And we ourselves can get sick or whatever so easily. But to stand on a rock that is Jesus, isn't that amazing? And why would you not want to do that? It is a no-brainer. It's a yes, yes, yes. It's a win, win, win. So why would we think we could do something different or better? We look forward to the day when Jesus returns and creates the new heaven and the new earth, the heavenly Jerusalem. We look forward to that city, not built on earth, not built by human hands, but an eternal city. And that's exactly what Abraham was looking for back in chapter 11. He was looking forward to the promised land physically, but in chapter 11 it says he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. Looking forward to the city whose architect and builder is God. He was looking forward to the same thing that we look forward to. We'll all be part of that city together if our trust is in him. Jesus Christ is the foundation of that city. He is the foundation that we can build our lives upon. Everything else is shaking sand, built by a dodgy builder that won't stand up to the shaking. But when we build our lives on him, step into his kingdom that is unshakable, we too will be unshakable because we are his. Maybe you'll read through the book of Hebrews yourself again and try to think of it in that light. People who are under pressure. But you and I are under pressure in different ways too. We're encouraged to keep our eyes fixed in Jesus, the author, the perfecter of our faith. He will not let us go. He will not let us down. He will not disappoint us. We can build our lives on him. Let us not be shaken.